Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. I am Parker McBride, and I am joined by my co-host, Matt Wasko, as always. Matt, how are things going today?
Well, me and my wife are going to go on a little getaway this weekend, so we're looking forward to that right almost immediately after the podcast.
Yeah.
So we're going to get away from the kids, you know. We feel like we have a house full right now. So kids didn't want us to leave, but like, listen, mom and dad need some time.
So they're on their own.
Yeah, and they're all old enough to feed themselves, wash their clothes, all of that. So we're going to get out of town a little bit. And outside of that, I'm started doing some Christmas shopping last night.
Good.
Yeah. So
it's never too early.
My wife did the cool thing of doing these little one-sheeters of things you need, things you'd like to have, you know, like things that that help you with this or that. I don't know. She worded like 10 different questions that would inspire things they would like for Christmas, and she sent them out to all the kids. And so I was going through them last night, earmarking things that I wanted to go over with her as far as ordering for the kids. And so I think we're going to be ahead of Christmas this year. A lot of times we're so freaking busy that we get 2 weeks out from Christmas and we're not either begun or we're like rushing. So I want to be ahead of the game. So probably in the next week, I'm going to order all the Christmas presents. So we have them, and we're not, you know, like trying to do last-minute shopping.
Exciting.
Yeah.
So last week, we had on two very interesting guests.
We did.
And if you guys haven't had a chance to listen to that, we recommend you go back and you do so. This week, it's just us. So we're going to talk about our Chiefs prediction.
Oh, yeah.
Last week.
Wasn't I closest?
Ooh, I don't remember. What was your score? I think
30-14.
30-14. Yeah, you had a little bit more of a blowout, though, because what was it, 30-24?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think I was too low on the score. I had the spread right. I picked 20-14 or 20-13. So I had the spread right, but the score wrong. You nailed the Chiefs score.
I nailed
score,
the
though.
Chiefs score. Should get some points for that.
But we both had a win, and they won. This week, the Chiefs are at home, playing a noon game. They are inviting in the Denver Broncos for a AFC West divisional matchup.
Hmm. Well, how the Broncos doing right now?
They are 5-4 on the year.
5-4.
I'll tell you what. I'll make my prediction first. That way you can deviate from me if you want to try to make up ground.
I know you're going to pick the Chiefs.
Yes, I will. Uh-huh. I don't know. There's been some people saying the Chiefs might drop this one, but I don't think so. I think the Chiefs roll. They win it close in Chiefs fashion, but I'm going to take the Chiefs 27-17.
Didn't the Chiefs have to go in overtime last week?
Yes.
Okay. Man, they're. I just keep thinking that offense is going to, like, you know, blow someone out. I guess I picked 30-14, so I guess it didn't really blow them out. But I don't know. It's like they're going to lose at some point. I just don't think this is the game. So I'm probably going to pick them. They have a pattern now. Their offense is kind of getting by. So I'm going to pick 21-17.
Okay. A little close game, but a Chiefs win.
Yeah.
Okay.
They tend to, if it's close, they win.
It does seem like that. They continue to win. They're 8-0, and most of their games are decided by one score.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy they can do that. We'll see if they can keep it up.
Reminds me of another time the Chiefs did this. This was when they Schottenheimer was still around. And they had a season. They went 13-3, I think. And every game was like this, every single game. And I was like, I don't know how they are 13-3, because I remember thinking they're the worst 13-3 team I've ever seen. And sure enough, they lost the first game of the playoffs, I think, to like the Colts or the Browns or something. But the thing, the difference with the Chiefs right now that is that they have some fantastic weapons, especially if they can get them all healthy. So, and they just signed a new receiver recently, right?
They traded for DeAndre Hopkins, if that's right. What you're talking
yeah.
about.
And did he play last week?
Yeah, he did really well.
Yeah. So, and when he starts getting in the offense and fluid, I think that's going to be a big difference for them. You know, and everyone probably wonders, like, how come Matt doesn't know every ounce of what's going on with the Chiefs? Well, you know, I don't really watch the Chiefs as much anymore. I used to be an NFL fanatic. But as I've gotten older, I enjoy a good game. Don't get me wrong. But I'm not watching every game. So that's why. I mean, I understand football. I played football. Watched it religiously for years. But in the last probably 10 years, I've kind of not as much. But anyway. So
there you have it.
Yep.
Both of us are thinking the Chiefs are going to roll again.
So I'm 3-2 or 4-2? What are you?
I think you're 4-2. I'm 6-0,
yeah,
I believe.
Okay. Well, I don't know when I'm going to catch you, but
I gave you the chance this week.
Yeah,
but
I know.
You didn't take it.
Yeah. Then I'd go down by 3. I don't think so.
All right. Okay. So let's move now into our Fit Focus. So we had a big event this past Tuesday. It was Election Day.
Wow. What a day. I'm telling you what.
It was quite the day, and we now know who our next president, who our next administration is going to be. Donald Trump will be 47th president
yep.
of the United States, and one of the people that he has had campaigning with him that he's promised to be in his presidency is Robert F. Kennedy Jr.,
right,
who has been talking a lot about the health in this country. And we're going to kind of talk a little bit about what that might look like with RFK Jr. in charge of the health department in this country, because there was an article that I saw. The headline reads, RFK Jr. says entire departments at the FDA have to go. So it looks like if he gets in there, he may be cleaning house a little bit in the FDA, and there may be some big shakeups with how we treat health in this country.
So, a couple things. What he's doing right now is unprecedented. Never has food become a major political item like it has. I'm glad. I'm thoroughly glad, because our food is terrible. But it's never been that in my lifetime, and I don't think in the last 100 years. And someone can email us in and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think food has ever been one of the top, or at least gotten so much coverage as it has with RFK being on there. And so, you know, that being said, he's taken on some Goliaths, okay? These are big. The FDA isn't just the FDA. It's connected, interconnected with a lot of shady connections. So the fact that him taking on the FDA, and also which is going to be a direct connect to food companies having to change the way they formulate their food, or how they deliver their food, how they distribute the food, how they produce the food, that could change. He could have an impact on everything. So I don't see them going down quietly. I see some shenanigans going on that would be directed at RFK. So we're going to see how this shakes out.
Yeah, and the main thing that I would hope for is just the educational piece to become widespread.
Yes.
Right? We know what's going to happen. We know that the media will tell you that everything he says is wrong.
Yep.
You know, and they will try to stonewall him at every chance. But just the fact that we can have a voice at the national level that's going to say these things and give people a chance to hear both sides and do some critical thinking on what's actually true. Because we obviously know the truth about nutrition the people we talk to learn the truth from us, but there are probably lots of people out there that haven't heard these things that are hopefully going to get a chance to hear these things for the first time.
Yes.
And I think the biggest thing for me, one thing it mentions is the article, is Kennedy talks about how, you know, some of these departments in the FDA, they're not doing their job protecting our kids. That's the one I'm kind of most excited about, because, you know, you have a lot of nutrition, governmental nutrition guidance that affects children when it comes to schools, the way they feed them, the way they do, you know, baby foods or kid food, foods for kids that are specifically directed towards kids. And some of these are the worst foods.
Yeah.
A public school lunch is not a nutritious lunch.
No.
Not at all.
And I will state that, you know, Jeff, who is the owner here at Anytime Fitness, one of his passions is to help kids in their school lunches getting a nutritional lunch. And that's something we are talking about for 2025, that the Anytime Fitness can be involved in some way to help not only educate, but be part of the solution to provide these kids with better quality lunches. So that's something we're looking for in 2025, because it's a passion of his.
Oh, I think it's incredibly important. So they say they don't really know yet exactly what role Robert F. Kennedy is going to hold, but they say they do know he is going to hold some sort of role. So we'll be watching that kind of as it unfolds. Trump will take office, what, in January?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll kind of see how things go from there, but it's something to keep an eye on, and I think it's a really positive development in the health outlook of this country.
Yeah, and here's the thing. At the very least, like you said, he's causing people to be like, huh, he wants to do something about nutrition. You know, a lot of people probably have seen that and be like, nutrition's bad? You know, they have no idea. They think, and it says, you know, all natural or natural flavors, you know, they think that, oh, well, it's good for you, because they don't do their homework and understanding what is in these products, these processed foods, because all these processed foods will say, you know, loaded with these vitamins and enriched, you know, big, you know, tag words that make you think these are healthy for you. And he's suddenly calling attention to him, because that's not the case. So, you know, for that being said, RFK is kind of slowly waking people up, just making it a major part of Trump's platform. So I'm hoping this has a big effect. You know, if let's say he wasn't able to change the way we process food. If people stop buying it, you know, like me and you, we source our food, right? I try to get as much as my food from the farmer's market as I can. I get my as much as my, probably I'd say 80% of my meat from the farm. I probably get probably about 80% of my dairy from the farm. And then I fill in the gaps with, you know, going to Sprouts. So, you know, the thing is that we shouldn't have to do that, right? Which is interesting, because we're going to get into a big topic here in a minute.
Raw milk on every shelf.
That's right.
In every fridge.
Every fridge needs to have raw milk. And then I want to take the word raw off of it and just call it milk, because that's what it should be. Anyway.
That's a good segue into our topic today, Matt.
It is. So this kind of, first of all, before we get into this. We've already talked about this, right, twice. Before I go on about this, I have been friendly challenged on concept of milk from people I admire and have a great deal of respect for. But people we admire and have a great deal of respect for, we can have friendly disagreements, right? And I think they're healthy. As long as they understand that both sides are seeking the truth, right? We want the truth for what is nutrition, right? you know, let's take out the fact that some people have autoimmune issues or have certain sensitivities to different foods. Okay, let's take that out of the equation. And one of the things that, you know, may come up with this is, you know, like people have inflammatory problems, right? Be it Crohn's or colitis or something like that. But I've run into people that are in our profession that believe milk is for cows and that milk is an inflammatory, that, you know, milk is all these things that aren't meant for humans. And I'm here to debunk those myths. So we have a list of, I think, 8 to 10 myths that we've come across that we want to kind of go, hopefully we can get through them all, but we want to definitely tackle the big ones. So, Parker, which one would you like to tackle first?
Well, first I want to say this is, let's see, who published this? The Crohn's and Colitis Foundation?
Is that correct? That particular one is from a website called The Gut Ninja, but it's the actual Crohn's and colitis. I would say what I found was they believe that. Let me pull that up real quick because I had that up here.
I was just trying to see who published these 10 reasons why you should ditch milk and dairy products.
Let me pull this up. Okay. I don't want to misspeak because this is something I didn't actually get off the Crohn's and colitis.
Okay.
But I was suggested to go to the Crohn's and colitis, and let's see if I can find this. I just went to the Crohn's and colitis foundation and see if I can find anything. Let's just punch in. They have a bunch of articles on this site, and so I'm going to put in dairy.
Because okay. I'm sure they recommend strongly against consumption of dairy.
Here's the thing
products.
I do know, that they believe that red meat and milk are inflammatories. Okay? They also believe that they have fats in them that aren't healthy.
I know I'm kind of a N equals one in saying this, just me by myself, but the least inflamed I ever am is if I'm mostly raw milk and red meat base in my diet.
Yes.
There are times that I have done that. I've spent a number of days where I consume maybe only raw milk and red meat to a lot of success.
Right.
With my inflammatories. So I would very strongly disagree with that.
Well, I found one of the things on the suggested foods for the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. Limit drinking milk or milk products if you have a lactose intolerance. Okay. Now, quickly on that, I've found that people... Well, I should back up before we cover that. One of the things you just said was that... What was it you just said? You just said something that struck me, and I can't remember what you said.
I don't remember.
Okay. So I'll go back to this, because limit drinking. So lactose intolerant, okay? What you find in the research, and I went and did some research on this prior, and there's been numerous studies. There's some fringe studies that say, yes, raw milk, that they believe raw milk can cause some lactose intolerance issues, but a vast significant majority say otherwise. Okay. Now let's clarify. We have to distinguish between pasteurized and raw. 100%. So I called Dr. Phil Carson, we had on the show 6 months ago, maybe. I asked him these questions. And he said, he confirmed everything that me and you believe, right? To almost 90%. He said, pasteurized milk, because of the way it's made, causes inflammation. He says, raw milk does not, because of the good bacteria that's in them. Now, if you go out onto Google and you say raw milk, it'll scare people. You know, like they say, oh, it can have really bad bacteria, them not understanding that when you put in, when you have good bacteria, it keeps back the bad bacteria. So that is a lie, or I should say a convenient untruth, that they think it's going to irritate your bowels or your intestines. So that's one of the things. I talked to someone that is actually in gastro. I can't remember the job. Anyway, so she's in gut health. And she works with people who have Crohn's disease. And part of their diet is they take them off dairy and meat. Okay. So I have at least 20 meal plans out there right now. I get compliment after compliment after compliment. Not so much that, I mean, within the first week that they're on these, right? That, man, I feel fantastic. Okay, well, one, okay, that's kind of anecdotal. Two, three, four, you know, I think I have at least 7 or 8 of those 20 that have come back and said, that came to me and said, man, I feel fantastic, you know, and they've only been on it maybe a week or two. So now starting to
and
come.
And they're eating a lot of raw milk.
Dairy.
Dairy. And red meat.
Dairy and red meat, yep. And like I said, all me and you do is we play with the numbers. I can get them to lose weight. I can get them to bulk, depending on how I play the numbers, right?
Yeah.
And they feel great. Now, the majority of my people, I'd say out of my 20, I don't think I have anyone bulking. They all want to lose weight.
Yeah, bulking would be a little bit tougher on this kind of diet. Very doable.
Yeah.
But it is harder to bulk, which is the interesting part about it. Is you eat healthy, you eat as much as you want, you don't gain weight.
Right. And I even, before I came onto the show, I listened to what Dr. Sean Baker had to say about it. And he was saying that, you know, if you have a lot of dairy, it would be maybe a little hard to cut weight. I was like, oh, I don't know if I agree with that, but I don't know. And that's all kind of relative to what he would consider a lot of dairy. Because my experience is, I can get my body to do whatever I want when I'm on dairy. I mean, it's very manageable, right?
Yeah.
So we have other trainers that we adore. Let me state that emphatically. At the very top of nutritional guidance for any trainer, if you're just in a calorie deficit, you're going to lose weight, okay, over time. And that could be where you have high fats, high carbs, low protein. That could be where you have high protein, high carbs, low fat. But if you're in a calorie deficit, you're going to lose weight, okay? So a lot of trainers don't want to have their carbs low, because when they have their carbs really low, then they are worried about insulin issues, okay? I haven't had any of those problems, none. And all I keep getting back is how good everyone feels. So that's just my anecdotal experience of all the meal plans that I do, because I believe in low carbs. And I think when you eat high carbs, you don't feel as good. What is your experience?
That is also my experience on both ends. The protein is obviously extremely important. The fat is extremely important for health purposes. The carbs are kind of what I play with that's what I talked about gaining weight and bulking on a low carb diet. is doable. It just may not happen as fast as what some people would like. If somebody comes in and they want to bulk very quickly, I would throw them on some carbs.
Yes.
And I would up the carbs 100%. To accommodate that. However, if you're just looking for health, you're looking at very low carb. If you're just kind of wanting to be healthy or you're wanting to cut weight, lean out, I'm going to cut the carbs way back because I think the proteins and the fats are too important to cut those out.
100%.
Because you're missing out on a lot of vital nutrients when you cut out your proteins and your fats. A lot of vital vitamins and minerals and nutrients are contained in those healthy animal proteins and healthy animal fats that aren't existent in carbs.
Yeah, so here, yeah, and the fats are important for your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So
very.
And that's where it's dangerous, and I think it's can bring on Alzheimer's sooner if you're not eating fats.
Well, this was something I was talking about with my wife the other day, talking about babies, because we were talking about breast milk,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking about raw milk today. So
yeah,
breast milk is raw milk, right? So my son is almost 6 months old, and the only thing he's ever consumed since the day he was born was raw milk.
Right.
Now it's human's milk.
Right.
But it's raw milk. It's extremely high in saturated fat and cholesterol because he's getting all that cream. You know, when you get a jar of raw milk and you got all that cream on top.
Right.
I mean, that's getting cream and all when he drinks the milk. Extremely high saturated fat, cholesterol versus if you ever look what's in baby formula, it's mainly seed oil based, carbohydrate based. The sugars, sugar-based,
mm-hmm.
there's a ton of carbohydrates in there. So if you compare children that are breastfed to children that are formula-fed, they mm-hmm. have found a pretty large difference in IQ mm. when they're older, of a lot higher IQ among breastfed babies.
Wow. Now, I have not heard that.
Yeah. And so the argument could be made that it's the fats in the breast milk that are missing in the formula that are the difference, because the fats are very important for brain development and brain health. The saturated fats.
You would think that would be something that would be at the very top of the list for women's guidelines when they're breastfeeding.
Well, see, now we get into, if you turn out smarter when you're breastfed, do the powers that make those guidelines really want us to be smarter?
Conspiracy. Yeah, no, it does seem like where every direction you turn, it's not for our benefit, right? The food we eat, the medicines we take, the directions and health guidance, you know, and here we are with this milk, okay? So, like I said, you go out on Google and you search raw milk and you don't know much about it, you're going to be scared. And this includes talking to health professionals.
What did I tell you that while you said that earlier, I Googled raw milk and saw what came up?
Oh, what did you come up?
The very first link is from the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, and it says unpasteurized milk can pose a serious health risk.
Wow.
That's the first thing that comes up.
Okay.
Whenever you Google raw milk. So right away you Google raw milk, oh, health risk, bad, and then you move on because you think it's bad.
Right.
Because you're trusting the FDA.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that's, it's just one of those things where you have all this evidence right now. No, sorry. I should say pseudo evidence that's saying that raw milk is bad. And, you know, so Here's the thing. Do you want to cover each one of these components that we said? Because I would say...
Yeah.
Okay.
So what we've got is a list of 10... The headline says 10 great reasons why you should ditch milk and dairy products. And we're going to talk about these one by one because obviously we don't agree with any of them, but all for different reasons.
Yes.
Let's just take them in order.
Okay. Number one... And I'll be curious what you say on this. This one was kind of like, where in the world are they? I didn't have time to research where they're getting this. Cassian in cow's milk is the most relevant cancer promoter ever discovered.
That's casein.
Oh yes, casein.
Casein,
I'm sorry.
The casein protein.
I always call it Cassian. Yes, you're correct.
Well, I did a little bit of digging on this because when I read that, I thought the same thing. Where are they getting this from?
Yeah.
That casein protein is the most relevant cancer promoter ever discovered. Like, more than cigarettes, you know? I mean,
seed oils?
Yeah. I was shocked by that. And I saw studies on both sides when I did my research. I did see a couple studies that claimed that the presence of casein can elevate the risk of prostate cancer, but I also saw studies that said they studied it and found no correlation. And here's the conclusion I've come to on that. It's not scientific. You know, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. But I can tell you one thing is that people didn't have cancer 100 years
there
ago,
you go.
200 years ago. It wasn't a common thing until the last few decades.
Exactly.
Last 50, maybe, you know, at this point, 70, 80 years. And I would say people have been drinking milk, especially raw milk, for much, much, much longer than that. It wasn't that long ago, probably 150 years ago. Every family had a milk cow.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's where you got your milk. You drank milk every day. You made your dairy products with it. You made your butter, your cheeses, your different stuff, and you consume them.
Right.
Everyone would have been dying from cancer. If it's the most prevalent cancer promoter and it's in milk, then why didn't we die from this cancer before? And now all of a sudden it's a huge problem.
Well, I think that's the most profound thing about this we've said. Cancer is a relatively a new thing in the last 100 years, okay? People have been drinking milk for thousands of years, okay? It's what we were raised on. It's what we grew on. It's what and people have been drinking milk for thousands of years. So cancer, so for someone to make that claim at this time and not associated with the fact that we now have processed foods and all the things that are in processed foods is just irresponsible. And so you said you found a study here and there. My conclusion would be is that if you're looking for a truth, or I should say you're looking for a confirmation, you'll find it, right? You'll find it. But looking at the whole picture, that's dishonest. Okay. You're going to realize like, well, okay, let's say you found a study and like exactly like you said, but it wasn't happening prior to the 19th century. Something's off.
Or there's something else. There's correlation without causation. Sometimes that's the case. Sometimes maybe, we found a little correlation here, but sometimes the causation or the reason is different than what the study concludes.
Exactly.
Does a presence of casein cause a more likely prostate cancer? That's possibly true, right? We found studies on both sides. But does that mean that by drinking the milk with the casein in it, that you're going to give yourself cancer? I don't think so. I don't think that itself is the reason.
Well, I think you made the clear distinction here. This is, as far as cancer is concerned, I don't think they're looking at the whole picture. And the majority of the studies are going to say that casein is not the problem.
Well, what do we know about cancer? Cancer is a mutation in the body.
Right.
What do you think is more likely to cause a mutation in the body? A processed food, a chemical, something that is not naturally occurring, or a natural product like milk straight from the cow?
Yeah.
You know, which is more unnatural to cause the body to mutate the way that it does to have cancer? It feels like common sense, right? But they're telling us here that it's not. And so we question that. We question, well, is our common sense lying to us?
Well, I find the word promoter curious. Seems like an umbrella term. Like,
not causing, but causing, it's promoting.
So does that mean if there is cancer in the body that being, that is caused by something else and this is exasperating it? Is that what that means? Because I wouldn't say that. I'd say sugar does that, right? So sugar makes cancer spread because cancer feeds off sugar from all the studies I've read.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting word they're using because it makes me think, you know, oh, we don't mean it causes it. It's a promoter of it. Well, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, very vague.
Yeah.
So second one down the list here, it says growth hormones clog your pores and cause acne, eczema, and psoriasis.
Well, I don't know if that's true even for pasteurized milk.
Well, you know, there is a instance of growth hormone in milk.
Right.
It's not very much. Some large dairies, they don't really do it anymore. I don't think hardly at all. But for a time there, they were giving their cows hormones to aid in the production of milk. And that was getting into the milk. I couldn't really say what, because that's not a widespread process that's done anymore, especially not in raw milk. It was more of on the large dairies, the commercial dairies. So, obviously everyone knows a child when they're growing up, like they get lots of acne and stuff because of the presence of growth hormone. Bodybuilders and stuff that will take artificial growth hormone to put on more muscle and get bigger will a lot of times get really bad acne. So it is, the growth hormone can cause that, but I'm not sure that the milk is the cause of the growth hormone issues.
No, and I've never heard this association before as far as the eczema and psoriasis. I've heard the exact opposite, that people when they get on dairy or in red meat, they clear up psoriasis and eczema. So this was a new one for me. And here's the thing. Some of these, it's kind of like anything. If you have an opinion about something, you'll find somebody somewhere who has a study that supports it. Okay?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
So I'm sure there is a study somewhere that is supporting these 10, what I call not great reasons, but there are 10 reasons why you should ditch milk and dairy.
10 lies about milk and dairy.
Yeah, 10 myths of what it should be. 10 myths. Anyway.
So third one, it says milk is linked to chronic diseases like osteoporosis, heart disease, diabetes, etc.
Which I would say is the exact opposite.
Yeah, so I would struggle to understand how milk is linked to these diseases. Osteoporosis, the presence of the calcium in the milk is well known to reduce the risk of osteoporosis. Yeah.
I just had someone who got a diagnosis of osteoporosis that I train, and are in early stages. And so I did her meal plan that includes dairy. And with, you know, resistance training, that's a good way to combat that.
That's a good combo.
Yeah. So you get the dairy, which will give you more calcium, and then you put your bones under stress and the body adapts to that, so it gives you more bone density.
Yeah, I would agree. Heart disease, I don't see that at all. I'm not sure how milk could lead to heart disease unless they're suggesting that the saturated fat and cholesterol content in the milk is leading to heart disease.
Right.
But we've debunked that many times on this show. the saturated fat and cholesterol heart disease mix. You can't get a much more natural form of saturated fat or cholesterol than through milk, through cow's milk.
Well, again, that was another question I had with one of the things I was talking to Dr. Phil about statin. And I have a client that's on statin, and I have concerns about their ability to build muscle. And I ran it past, you know, Dr. Phil, who, as far as when it comes to nutrition, is very well versed. And he said, 100%, statin makes it difficult to build muscle. It's also hard on your joints. So, you know, statin is given to you to, you know, help reduce cholesterol. And he, you know, we both talked about how the brain is made of cholesterol. Like, the lower you start getting into 100 to 150 on the scale of the cholesterol rating, and that's considered a sign of mortality. Okay, you start getting 200, 250, 300. You know, as long as it's not oxidized LDL, and he confirmed that with me as well. So I'm like, sometimes I'm like, you know, I'm not a doctor, so I better, you know, confirm with someone I trust that, you know, because, you know, we can read too. Right? We can read studies. It's not like, you know, we just, someone says it and we're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Because we see the results of these different approaches, right? And that usually the results kind of tell us if something is not working or is working. So then you go and talk to the doctor who is experienced in it, very well versed in nutrition. And he said the exact same thing. And I said, is like, as long as it's not oxidized LDL, you need a special blood test to see that. He says the blood test they've been using is outdated and it's been used for 40 years. You have to request a very particular type of blood test to see your large and small particle LDL. So you can have 300 points on the cholesterol or on your LDL scale, or your HDL, and look at your LDL. And if it's almost all large particle, you're great. That's a sign of a great immune system. Okay, your body's getting lots of good cholesterol. So we have to, that's another thing, that it's not just about cholesterol. It's like, what type of cholesterol is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Other disease that it lists is diabetes, which I'm also very confused about. We have talked many times about how processed sugars and sugar consumption lead to diabetes. The fast digesting carbohydrates, simple carbohydrates. There is some sugar in milk, but it's a naturally occurring sugar, and it's not high enough of a level when you combine it with the protein and the saturated fats to lead to diabetes.
Would that be, because I don't drink pasteurized milk, does pasteurized milk have more sugar? I wouldn't think it would.
I don't think it does, but it could definitely alter the way the body processes the sugar.
Gotcha.
And that could be the possibility.
Yeah.
Because that is one thing I will say here. They're talking specifically about, I'm sure they're talking about pasteurized dairy here, because they don't specify.
Yeah.
So 100%. These are all geared towards pasteurized dairy. And in some of the cases, the things they say may be right, but are not true for
raw milk,
raw dairy.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we'd cover earlier, and I think it comes on here in a minute, but when it comes to inflammation, 100% pasteurized milk can cause inflammation by the way it's made, okay?
Yeah.
Not by raw milk.
And here's one of the, I mean, these are all pretty laughable, but this one is really ridiculous. It says calcium from milk is poorly absorbed compared to plant-based calcium.
Yes.
What do we know about nutrients in animal proteins?
They absorb... Number one, milk is at the very top.
Way better than plant-based.
Yeah, way better. The bioavailability in milk is at the very top as far as absorption into the body. Plants are at the very bottom.
Exactly.
So, I mean, lectins that are in your green-leafed plants, they are inhibitors to absorbing those nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
Because their plants have a protective mechanism in them. And because they don't want to be eaten, right? So that is about probably the most laughable one on here.
Well, and I think the interesting part about it, too, is let's say that the calcium is less absorbed, but the prevalence is so much higher than it is in plant-based proteins, that I still think even if it was less absorbed from milk, you're still going to get more calcium by drinking milk.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's not that much calcium in really any plants.
No, it's very low.
Yeah.
Which, again, is who's putting this list together? I mean, it looks like an agenda list.
Yeah.
You know, 100%.
Does seem like it.
Yeah.
Let's see. What's the next one say? Lactose doesn't... Oh, here's the one you were talking about. Lactose doesn't digest properly, leaving people chronically bloated, gassy, and sick.
Oh, yeah. We had a question this morning before the show. One of our trainees asked, well, do you have gas? It's like, I looked at Parker and I said, I never have gas. Do you have gas? He's like, no, I never have gas. So, negative.
Yeah, definitely the raw milk. Because I will say, I haven't had a drink of pasteurized milk in, gosh, at this point, I think it's been 22, 23, 20, almost 3 years.
3 years, wow.
I think I started drinking raw milk at the beginning of 2022. Yeah, beginning of 2022. So it's been almost 3 years. So I couldn't really tell you. I don't really remember pasteurized milk, if it had this kind of effect on me. I know it does for some people. The people that are lactose intolerant, the people that have issues with dairy, that don't consume dairy specifically because of their digestive issues. I mean, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
And people have that, but it's exclusively with pasteurized dairy.
Yes.
I don't know of anybody that has... Everyone that I've heard has always said it's at least significantly better, if not completely eliminates the issues when they switch to unpasteurized dairy.
Yes. Well, we both know Forrest... that I train,
mm-hmm.
Comes to the morning workout sometimes with you, mm-hmm. and he's listened to our milk programs, and he's totally sold, right? He loves raw milk. He buys it every week.
Where does he get it from?
You know, I don't know where he get it. I think he found a source in his church. So I need to ask him where he's getting that. But he drinks raw milk every morning and before he comes and works out. And... But he does have a slight response to it. He kind of gets a little bit of a cough for just a little bit. But he says, and then it's gone. Doesn't cause anything else. He says, but that little bit of cough ain't nothing. And he's like, the nutrients that are in milk are far outweigh the little cough I get. So I don't know why he gets that little cough, but there's no other side effects. Because he's been, you know, one time he was working out and he's like, you know, coughing a little bit, and are you okay? He goes, oh, I just, you know, I had my cup of raw milk this morning. Sometimes it gives me a little bit of a cough, and then I'm done. And I was like, okay.
Interesting. Yeah. I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah, yeah. It's, that's a little bit different. You know, and maybe he has a slight intolerance to some of the chemicals that are in milk. But he understands the value of it, and he says he's been feeling great, you know, so...
Yeah, I've definitely never experienced chronic bloating, gassy, or sickness from my raw milk.
No. So this next one, I don't want to move on too fast. Are you ready for the next one?
Ooh, this one's an interesting one.
So I heard this three times in a span of 3 days. Okay, that cow's milk is for cows, not humans. Okay. And I was like, well, this is something that we have to debunk. So, and we kind of already debunked it a little bit, but no, it is not just for cows. Okay. It's already been the amount of protein. Remember what we said? What makes it for humans is that it's bioavailable. We absorb it. We get all the nutrients from it, which means it's healthy for us. So there's no distinction that say, well, because a cow made the milk, I can't drink the milk. Okay. It is 100%. You get so much from raw milk that the body absorbs, you know, not only in your macro breakdowns, but also in the nutrients that are in there. So it's loaded, and it's probably one. There's a few foods that I consider perfect foods, and they tend to be all dairy, right? Eggs, cream.
Eggs aren't dairy.
That's right. Sorry, but eggs are from the farm, so that's why I was making that association. So, okay, perfect foods, not dairy. Okay, so perfect foods: eggs, milk, cream, and then not dairy but red meat. So these are what I consider they. And that's if they are fed correctly. You know, they're allowed to graze. They're not, you know, the chickens aren't, you know, put into a pen and stressed out. You know, so you treat the animals well, they produce great quality food. And then they're, and you don't, the eggs aren't sitting, like we've talked about, you know, eggs aren't sitting for 6 months before they get in our grocery stores. You get them immediately, right? They don't have some type of coating on them. So when it comes to cow's milk, I consider milk one of the perfect foods produced.
I agree. Let me ask you this question, Matt. What is the best kind of milk for humans to consume?
The best kind of milk?
The best species of milk.
That's a good question. I can tell you what I've had to drink and I've only had two different kinds of species, and that's goat milk and cow's milk. And as far as taste, the goat milk was great. It has a little bit different taste. And then, now if you're throwing humans in that, then that would be at the very top. But that we usually get that when that's important for development when they're babies.
Well, that was kind of the point I was going to get.
Oh, okay.
Was
there you go.
Human milk is the best milk for humans
yes.
to consume.
Yes.
Right? And so you can sit here and you can argue, well, we're not cows, so we shouldn't be drinking cow's milk. Okay, then we need to drink human's milk. Right?
Yeah.
But who wants to do that? I mean, when we're a baby, yeah. But there's actually a very large black market for human breast milk.
Is that right?
Yeah, 100%. A lot of bodybuilders are buying it because of the nutrient bioavailability. It's actually better for you nutrient wise than cow's milk.
Well,
easier to digest and consume.
Yeah,
it's a big deal.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
See, I don't know about that either. And that's kind of my point that I'm going to make is, okay, yeah, if you want to have the most ideal form of milk, then you need human's milk.
Yeah.
But nobody really wants to do that. So you go to the next best options. Goat's milk is actually a better option than cow's milk. They studied both of them together. Goat's milk is closer to human's milk than cow's milk is.
Right.
Not that significantly, but it is closer. And so goat's milk is a good option, and cow's milk is still a very good option too. Sure, it's not as good as human's milk, right? Well, we're humans, not cows. Okay, then drink human's milk. If you don't want to do that, then you got goat milk and cow's milk. That's what you got.
Exactly.
And it's still extremely good for you.
Very good for you. Yeah, 100%.
You may be able to pick up a little bit of extra additional nutrients and bioavailability through human's milk because it is meant for humans. But one of the things, you know, the interesting thing about cows is cows' digestive system is very different than humans,
mm-hmm.
but not when they're babies. They transition over time into being able to forage on grass. Because like humans, we can't eat grass and survive.
Right.
Because our digestive systems are different than the way cattle's digestive system. Cattle are a ruminant animal.
Right.
We're not. So, but as a baby calf, their digestive system is a lot closer to ours than it is once they get older.
Right.
And then become, they can rumen, they can chew their cud, eat, graze on grass, and be healthy. And so it's not as different as what a lot of people think when they're a baby.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting that you say that you're a farmer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So born, raised, you know how to farm. And I have 100% admiration for that. My dad was a farmer. My mom was from a farming family. So I understand what goes into it. It's hard work. You know, a lot of people, if they're raised on farms, they would probably have a different outlook on life. But the thing that's interesting about it, you're a farmer, and you would probably have the greatest understanding of the value of milk. And if you did have the greatest understanding and it was bad for you, then you would tell us, it's for cows. We don't drink that. Because I'm a farmer, I know, right? But that's the exact opposite of what you're saying, right?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
An interesting thing, a lot of people don't know. So take humans, for example. Baby's born. The baby drinks the mother's milk.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it does for the first, you know, few months of life. A cow is similar, but the process is sped up. It's not a few months. It's, you know, it's a few weeks that the calf is exclusively drinking the mother's milk. It can be, you know, start after a few weeks, a couple months to, you know, maybe poke around, graze a little bit. But see, if you have a cow, say that it has a calf and the cow can't milk. Mm-hmm. It can't produce milk, or the cow dies, or, you know, something happens where you've got this calf and you don't have its mother's milk to give it.
Right.
They make what they call milk replacer, and you can feed it basically artificial milk. It's like powdered milk. You know, you mix it with water and then you feed it to the calf. And obviously you prefer not to have to do that, but there's plenty of situations where that ends up being the case. Those calves are so much harder to keep healthy, the ones that are fed the milk replacer. They get sick all the time. They're not as energetic and active. They're harder to keep alive. They require more medications and things in order to keep alive and keep healthy. And just goes to show you the value of the actual real milk to those calves is everything.
Yeah.
If you have a calf that gets its mother's milk, I mean, it doesn't matter what you throw at that thing, it's going to live and survive and thrive.
Right.
But it doesn't have it, you can usually keep it alive, but it's not near as good.
Yeah. Wow, that's fascinating. Well, that's that's a testament. You know, you said first, if a baby's raised on formula versus breast milk, there's a distinct difference. And I think my wife was breastfeeding for the first year, give or take, depending on the child. And because she understood, I mean, my wife was like, you know, I want this is really good for my kids,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, and that was in my 20s, and if I had some of the education back then that I have now, we might have even stayed on it longer. But, you know, that's why you're really ahead of the game.
I don't know. I think... Well, I don't know how long we're going to go. I wouldn't say we may not go that long. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, did we beat that one up, or do you have something else to say on that one?
No, I think we beat that one up pretty good.
Okay. Makes losing weight difficult due to high saturated fat content and inflammation.
It makes losing weight difficult? Is that what they really said? Drinking milk makes weight difficult due to high saturated fat, right? Because, we know that high saturated fat means you can't lose weight, right? Because no one that's ever had a high saturated fat diet has lost weight. Go ask all these people that do, you know, carnivore-based diets, which are through the roof in saturated fat and cholesterol, and they drop insane amounts of weight. They can't even keep weight on, right? You have people losing hundreds of pounds, you know, very overweight people. And if you're a thinner person that goes on a diet like this, you'll find the same thing. I mean, you're losing weight you didn't even need to lose.
Right.
So the idea that the high saturated fat in milk is going to make losing weight difficult is so untrue. It's the opposite. Why is it that on all these things we're finding that what they're saying is the opposite is true? Every single time.
Almost the exact opposite. Yeah.
Exactly.
Exact opposite. And which makes me think, there's so many agendas these days. This is an agenda top 10 list, right? And boy, I love the passion on that. I usually don't see you get that animated.
Bored 7 into this and getting tired of them.
Yeah, so I'll have to capture that one for a short for sure. The inflammation, we've already talked about that several times now, but That's gastro medicine number one, is that you got Crohn's or is it colitis? Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, colitis disease, which is irritable bowel or intestinal inflammation. The first thing they do is take you off of dairy products. And talking to a dear friend of ours, she's like, oh, no, it's both pasteurized and unpasteurized. They both do the same, and that's not true. And I did a little research. The reason they didn't think that raw milk is bad is because it can have bad bacteria. Well, we just covered several shows ago that the reason the bad bacteria can never get ahead is because there's good bacteria in there. And as you said, that it, you know, as the milk sits, it doesn't go bad. It just changes its structure, right? And it still can be consumed. So that being said, is that it never goes bad, and because the bad bacteria can never take over. So, you know, unless it's tainted with something. But the whole point is that you know, to say that is just the exact opposite. Raw milk is not going to cause inflammation. In fact, it's going to reduce it.
Matt, have you heard of anybody who has inflammation problems that they have cut all of the inflammatories out of their system except for milk, and they're still having the problem?
They have inflammation, and they've cut all the inflammatory components out of their diet except for raw milk?
Yeah.
No.
Well, see, because here's what I'm going to talk about here. Inflammation, right? We can sit here, and a lot of times I think we get in the weeds on this argument. Well, milk, is it good? Is it bad? Is it causing inflammation? Does it not? Well, you know, some people have inflammation, so we shouldn't drink milk. But those same people will go out, and they will have diets filled with processed foods and sugary drinks and candies and chips and fast food, grocery store processed foods, you name it. But then they want to complain about that, well, milk's inflammatory, so don't drink it.
Yeah.
That's not really the reason, right?
Right.
If you're sitting here and if you're saying, okay, I've got inflammation, I need to figure out what the problem is, we're going to cut out so many more things before we get to milk.
Oh, yeah.
If you're down to where all the inflammatories are cut out and we're saying all it can be is the milk, then okay, but I've yet to see that.
Yeah.
I've yet to see that in anybody. And if anybody gets to that point, then I'll say, okay, you're one of the cases where, yeah, maybe you shouldn't drink milk if you get to that point. But usually you're not. Usually these are people saying, oh, I don't want to drink milk. Okay, what else do you eat that might inflame you? And there's a huge list of stuff.
Massive list. Yeah, all in processed foods.
So don't come talk to me about milk till you've cut everything else out. That could be the problem.
Well, I'm going to give you a little story that's happening right now. Okay. I have a client. You know him. His name's the elderly guy I train here that sits in the chair when I train him. Sent him to a... to get some work in the neurosuit that we had both tested a year and a half ago. And it's working. And he's had like 3 sessions in it. And he's already he's having more control of his limbs than when he started. Okay, so that's wonderful. The doctor on staff that sees some inflammation in his veins has prescribed him a nutritional meal plan. He's taken him off all dairy. He's taken him off all meats. And everything he gave him was all vegan processed foods. 100%. All processed. Okay. So I went and looked at the ingredients in these things. Many inflammatories in these products. In fact, worse inflammatories than whatever even pasteurized milk can do. So that being said, I'm going to be having a phone conversation with this doctor. And that was one of the reasons I had called Dr. Phil, is because I'm getting ready to have this Zoom call with this doctor, letting him understand that I won't send another client there if he prescribes these type of nutritional plans, where he's putting them on processed, which are worse than a lot of your other processed foods, but processed vegan diets. And I went through and analyzed all the ingredients, wrote them all down, cancer-causing, inflammatories. They also target particular the heart. They also target the prostate. So, you know, it's mind-blowing to me, you know, that he's worried about inflammation. So he takes them off all dairy, all red meat, which is, I'm sure he's thinking about cholesterol because this client's on statin. He wants to get off of it. And so he wants to take him off all these things. And I had let him know that we need to have a conversation. So I was seeing if we can come up with some type of agreement going forward. So this is what we deal with in the medical community. That it's like turning it's like here's I'm going to take away these inflammatory components that they believe are inflammatory and give you new inflammatories, and it just doesn't make any sense.
The funny part about that is red meat is, as far as I know, the only food that we know to not be inflammatory. Right, people who do like elimination diets to try to figure out what is causing the issues, what is causing the inflammation, they always eliminate down to red meat. And that's because red meat's not the problem.
Right.
And I have heard of many people who have diets who have had really bad problems with inflammation, and just everything is causing problems, and the one thing that they can eat is red meat,
right,
without any problems. And that's pretty well across the board. And I don't see how you could call yourself a professional, you could call yourself someone who has the best interest of the health of your patients in mind and recommend no red meat because it's inflammatory.
Yeah.
I still don't understand why you would not recommend it for other reasons. But especially for inflammation, that's got no basis at all.
Well, my suspicion is that he thinks it's cholesterol based. That's my suspicion, why he wants to take him off the red meat.
So he's hoping that by taking him off of red meat and dairy, that his cholesterol levels will drop, and then they can take him off the statin.
I'm guessing. Yeah, I'm guessing.
Well, does that doctor know that there is no correlation between dietary cholesterol intake and blood cholesterol level?
Apparently not.
Because that's what he's suggesting by trying to get him off of dietary cholesterol so we can lower his cholesterol.
Right. Yeah, so
think about the guy that ate all the eggs that we talked about. He consumed, so much higher cholesterol than any human has ever been recommended to eat. And his cholesterol went down by 20% in a month.
They should have tested his IQ before and after. Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. So I have to, I'm just a trainer, right? But I do have a lot of research in nutrition, and I can read nutritional studies, and I can also ascertain when studies are being funded. What were you going to say?
Well, I'm so done with that.
Yeah.
That whole, you're not a medical professional. You can't speak on this.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not a medical professional. I haven't had the same training as these medical professionals, but not just medical, any subject, right? Mm-hmm. You're not an educated professional. Who cares?
Yeah.
Let's listen to other opinions. Let's listen to what people have to say. Let's test these things for ourselves. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care if I'm not a medical professional. It doesn't mean that I can't give recommendations. Now, well, with that said, if you're impersonating a medical professional, then yeah, you shouldn't impersonate somebody and act like you have credentials you don't.
Right.
But hey, I know who I am and what credentials I have and what education I have. Here's what I know. Why can't we say that?
Well, you either have a good argument or a bad argument.
Well, you're trying to gatekeep information.
Yeah.
So you funnel all these people into this these classrooms, these colleges, right, these programs, you teach them all the exact same thing, and then they come out, they're only allowed to do the things that you taught them, or their license gets revoked. And then anybody who hasn't gone through that training, or I mean brainwashing,
yes,
can't give any advice at all.
Correct.
Does that sound okay?
No.
But then why do people, well, you know, the doctor said this. I know you said this, but this is what the doctor said. It's different, so I had to follow that.
Right.
Do you care about your health?
Yeah.
Do you care about your life? Because if you do, you would have some critical thinking in this, and you wouldn't just blindly trust what the doctor says. Because most doctors, they don't actually know what they're talking about, especially when it comes to nutrition.
Right.
They're right. Salesmen. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. So pharmacies and drug companies have representatives that go out to doctors. And they visit these doctors, and they try to convince the doctor that the drug that they sell is best for them to prescribe to their patients. And then they, so that they will prescribe it to their patients. So they're salesmen.
Yeah.
Is what they are.
Right.
They're salesmen only. Right. And they're trying to sell these drugs because by selling the drug that they've created, they make money. So they go out and they try to lobby these doctors into prescribing their drug. It's not anything to do with what the patient actually needs, what's best for the patient, the best health for the patient. It's all about, hey, if we can convince this doctor to prescribe our drug instead of the other person's drug, then we'll make money.
Right.
That's what it's all about.
Right.
And whether the doctors know they're part of the game or not, they are part of the game.
They are.
And some have woken up.
Yeah.
And we have doctors. We have licensed. I mean, Dr. Sean Baker is a good example. Mm-hmm. Dr. Sean Baker, has all the credentials, all the licenses, everything, right? And he still says the things that we say.
Right.
He agrees with us.
Yeah.
Even though he's not supposed to, and he nearly has had all his licenses revoked because he uses his critical thinking, and he says the things that he actually sees are true, and the things that are actually happening, the things that are actually healthier for people, and they've almost revoked his license over it, and he had to go through some crazy processes to not have his license revoked to even practice medicine. Yeah.
Well, that's true with Dr. Phil Carson. It was the same thing. He was he started using food the same way Dr. Sean Baker started using food to heal them versus petroleum drugs. And so when you realize, well, all you need to do is change your nutrition and you'll be healthy, then the hospitals lose money. Okay. This is what's going on. Okay. When you can solve your problem by just eating better versus, you know, taking, you know, very expensive drugs or getting very expensive procedures, you know, or hospital stays, the hospitals lose money. Okay. So you have to understand the motivation. The motivation here is money. And when people are eating healthier, the hospitals don't make as much money. And so that's where we have to understand, you know, I mean, if there's anything that should deter you from blind belief in the medical community, all you have to do is look what's happened the last 3 years. That's all you have to do. Okay. It is blatantly obvious that the medical community was lying. Blatantly.
You ever heard the saying, sell them bullets and band-aids?
I think I have.
Yeah. But it's the concept behind that. It's that if you sell bullets and then, you know, people shoot each other, but then they need band-aids because mm-hmm. they've got wounds. So then you sell the band-aids and you're making money on both sides. And that's the medical community for you.
100%. Yeah.
Oh, well, we're going to sell you this drug that's going to help you. We're not going to teach you to fix your diet. We're not going to teach you to get healthier or whatever. We're going to sell you this drug, and we're going to tell you that that's going to work. And then when it doesn't, and you get down the road, and you need surgeries, and you need medical interventions, now we have something else to sell you then, which is the surgery, the medical intervention, and we make money off that too. And so it's about creating a customer, right?
Long-term.
Yeah, a long-term customer, because that's what happens. People go on one medication, then they go on two, then they go on three, then they have to have surgery, and then they need to have this done, and then they end up in the hospital, and then... and then they're in like long-term care, and then, you know, and you put them on this drug that they take every day for the rest of their life. Right. Think about that. What better way to, I mean, a customer for life, like literally for life,
mm-hmm.
because they have to take it till they die, or that's what they're at least prescribed to do.
Exactly.
It's crazy how they, how much they have us, and we've got to get out of it. And that's why, you know, the hope is that through this awakening, through this administration, Trump appointing Robert F. Kennedy and other people, I'm sure there are plenty of other people involved too behind the scenes,
right.
that they want to make this country healthy, and hopefully the right people are put in place to wake people up to what's going on.
Yeah.
And so they can know.
Yeah.
Because if you willingly choose this, okay, right? If you're well-educated on both sides and you know what's going on and you still choose to subject yourself to the traditional medical community, then that's fine. That's your choice to do. But it's not fair for the people that they don't know.
Exactly. Right?
Now, everyone should always do their research, and I always say that. And it's, if your own ignorance is, you know, it's your own fault, right? But it's still better if we can at least give everyone access to the information and put it in front of them so that they see it.
100%.
And listen to it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and we have to get rid of that stigma that, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, right? Because I work for a doctor, or I am a doctor, right? It's like Ben Shapiro said. I mean, he had, we call that speaking from authority, right? And, you know, and I might have mentioned this in previous shows, and I apologize if I have, but Shapiro had one time was being challenged that, you know, he doesn't know what he's talking about on a particular subject because he's not a professor at a college to speak on this. And he said, you really need to avoid speaking from authority because it's a stupid way to argue. I either have a good point or a bad point, right? Argue the merits of the discussion or my point versus because of where I'm speaking from. And he says, you know, because the reality is I recognize bullshit when I hear it. Okay, and that's from something he said probably 4 or 5 years ago, and it was very well stated. So, you know, and that's where we have to start understanding is that we may not be doctors, but we know bullshit when we hear it, right? And me and you, we see it every day. We see the results of what people eat, and it's clear as day. So, you know, that's where we got to have to start. I mean, and again, the medical community and the health community don't really get along. We're hoping someday that they do.
That would be nice. Where you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about where you go and the people that you talk to. Because it's hard to know. I mean, a lot of people that I know, they don't really have a doctor. They don't have a primary care physician because they don't know any they can trust.
No, 100%. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many times I had to tell the doctor wanted to do something. They wanted me to get the vaccine shot. They wanted this before the COVID. They wanted my kids to get all the vaccines. I said nope, and I had to tell the school the reason I wasn't going to do it, and it's religious freedom, and they had to accept that. Okay, and then I had to tell the doctor multiple times I would not be getting the COVID shot over and over and over, and they have to ask every single time. Okay. So, you know, you have to be your own advocate when you go into the medical community, which a lot of people don't want to do that, right? So, you know, and I was asked, the doctor said I should go on statin. I'm like, nope, not happening. So you have to be educated on these issues.
Yeah, I agree completely. I there was a doctor that, well, I guess, so the doctor I went to growing up, his practice sold out. And so when I was, I don't know, getting out of high school or something, and I didn't really go to the doctor again after high school, but there was this new doctor. And so I thought, well, if I ever need to go to the doctor, I can just go to him because I was a transferred patient or whatever, you know,
right.
So it counted. And so, but it was kind of while COVID was going on. I think it was one of my parents had went in there, and they asked him why he thought that the flu cases were so low during that year.
Right.
And when COVID was so high, you know, because it was like flu cases, I don't know, you know, 20 million every year. And then all of a sudden it was like 0.1 million during 2020. And then it went back up to, you know, 20 million. And it was like just that one year, the flu cases. He said, why do you think the flu cases were so low? While COVID was going on. And he answered and he said, because everybody was wearing masks.
Meaning that they wouldn't get the flu because they're wearing masks?
Yes.
And
I said,
I thought we kind of discovered the mask didn't work that well.
Exactly.
Okay.
But that's what he said.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you're disagreeing with that point. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So yeah. That was the point where I said, well, I'm not going to go see that doctor. If I ever need a doctor, I'll find somebody different.
Well, I think one, we could probably determine that there was a high number of those flu cases that were determined to be COVID cases. That's the only way that makes sense.
Yeah. Then that's kind of what I was getting at, too. And that's what I think my mom was getting at by asking him. But he didn't agree.
It failed miserably.
Yeah. Well, let's tackle our last two here before we go.
Okay.
Because these are both... they're kind of out there, but okay. The ninth one says there are much tastier alternatives like coconut and almond-based milks and yogurts.
BS.
Tastier alternatives.
When I read that, I was just like, what in the world?
Maybe if you're comparing them to skim milk, but some good whole raw milk, nothing tastes any better.
I don't know. That is out there. That one is probably in the top one or two of these insanities that we're reading as complete baloney. And I don't even know how to address that. I mean, you either have terrible taste buds or you've been acclimated to... Now, okay, I got to be careful here. My wife has a texture issue, okay? And she's had that texture issue all her life. Like, won't touch a mushroom, doesn't like yogurt because of the way it feels in her mouth, you know, those kind of things. So she's kind of weird. So, sorry, honey, that's kind of weird. and she thinks milk's too thick, like raw milk, too thick, okay? And so it's more in her head than in her mouth. Okay, so I think there's those people that have it so ingrained in their head of the ick factor because it's been milk bad, milk bad, milk bad for decades, right? So it's in their head like it can't be good. So it's almost blocks the freshness that you actually get from it. So I guess there's that. But if that's removed from you and you have the freedom to understand the value of raw milk and just taste it for its taste versus, you know, almond milk or, you know, coconut or almond milk, then that's insane.
Well, have you ever looked in the ingredients of the almond milk?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's
just as bad.
Oh, it's extremely processed.
Yeah, very processed.
Yeah. How do you go from almond to milk? I don't know, but they have some sort of process that they do.
And I think it takes probably a million almonds to make that one carton of almond milk.
Who knows? But I'm sure it takes a ton of processing, and I know there's a ton of extra added ingredients. And like we talked about, natural, fresh, whole foods just taste better than the processed foods.
It's not even a contest.
No.
I mean, you ask any chef who knows that understands freshness, you know, that if you sit there and said, you know, as long as he hasn't been indoctrinated, but he understands, you probably have to get a chef, you know, a chef from France or something that really graces, you know, real food, the freshness of food. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hey, do you want to make that meal with, you know, raw milk, or do you want to make that with almond milk? I mean, if he's worth his weight, he's going to choose the raw milk. So,
yeah, let's tackle this last one here. Okay. It's another head scratcher, to say the least. Cheese has a strong opioid effect on the brain, making it dangerously addictive. What? Don't eat cheese because you're going to get addicted to it.
I don't even know where to go with that. That's just so absurd. This isn't Doritos, right?
Yeah. And there are way worse things to be addicted to than cheese.
I don't.
They're not arguing that it's unhealthy. They're arguing that
you can get addicted to it.
It's addicted, and that's why you should not eat it.
I don't know.
I've never felt addicted to cheese, and I mean, I eat a lot of cheese, but I've never had an issue putting the cheese down.
I think the point where you feel like you're addicted to something means there's something wrong with what you're eating, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I might love cheese, but there's a difference between loving something and being addicted to it. Meaning when you're addicted to it, that means there's a chemical compound in that food that's making you think about it all the time. I gotta have those Doritos. I can't stop eating them. There's something in there that's causing that opioid effect. Okay. Cheese isn't like that. Okay. So I enjoy a great hamburger with great meat and great, you know, good fresh products on that hamburger, but I don't sit there, okay, I want to eat it again in 5 seconds. Right. And cheese is the same way. I might enjoy a nice slice of cheese, but I don't eat the entire block.
Matt, we've been on this podcast for over an hour. I don't know if I can handle it much longer without my cheese. Deprived.
I got to go get my cheese fix.
Start carrying my cheese with me all day, pull it out of my pocket, and eat it whenever I have the urge.
Yeah, we start walking around with dairy products in our little coolers with dairy products, and we're constantly, I gotta keep eating. This is just insanity. It's insanity.
Yeah.
And so this is the third episode. We've never probably hit a subject as much as milk. And I hope this is, and if we have to cover it again, we'll bring in somebody. We'll bring in.
Would be good.
You know, we'll bring in Dr. Phil or someone who has great, vast knowledge in the milk components. But I'm hoping that this kind of puts some swords in some of these myths, you know, and or at least gets people to think.
Well, I think it's important to look at these things and kind of break them down a little bit, because there are lots of arguments and things used to stray us against milk and against raw milk, and it's important that people have perspective.
Absolutely.
Because you can read some of these, and I don't know. I don't think they're all that convincing, because I have a background of knowledge to understand why they're not. But if somebody that didn't know anything about milk read these, most of them, other than maybe the addictive cheese, would seem reasonable. And so it's important to have both sides, and then you can choose from there. As long as you're educated on both sides and you understand what your options are and what the truth is, then you can make your decision from there.
Well, you'd have to be pretty uneducated to believe the calcium in plants is better than the calcium in milk, but I'll leave that there.
Yeah.
all right, guys. Well, we made a prediction, so... Yep. I think we're going to have another guest coming on either next Saturday or the following Saturday. I won't be here this Saturday of Thanksgiving. Guess that'd be Thanksgiving is 28th.
Yeah.
29th, so the 30th. So we won't have a show on the 30th unless Parker wants to go solo. But we will have a guest on before then, someone that we've been with for quite some time, and she has a great, great story to tell.
Yep, that should be very exciting. But we'll be back with you next week,
whether
we have her or not, for another great episode. This was episode 40. I want to thank you all for joining us, and I want to add one more thing before we go out. I want to say, make America healthy again.
Yes.
Let's do it.
That's going to be something we say, make America healthy again. So we don't have to source our food from the dark corners of the state. So, all right, guys, have a great one.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.